Good evening, church. It's good to see all of you this evening. I've got to say that this evening is the one that I've been looking most forward to because Ezekiel is one of the Bible characters that I've really been getting interested in the last year. And I've probably read over the book, I don't know, 50 times this year, and I just keep finding stuff, more stuff, and Ezekiel is just such an interesting person, and we're not going to be able to get through everything that I could talk about him, but we are going to talk a bit about him. But this week's topics I've titled "Ordinary is God's Extraordinary," and they've been sermons designed to at least help us understand that the great heroes of faith in the Bible weren't necessarily, and actually were not at all, heroes based upon their own extraordinary power. Even somebody like Moses, who did, as we looked at last night, who did have extraordinary talents, did not succeed based upon his extraordinary talents, but only based upon God working through him. And so, one of these, it's basically, these lessons have been designed to say, you know, you don't have to be anybody special in order for God to use you for a special purpose. But tonight I want to go in a slightly different direction, because some of us aren't ordinary. Some of us are weirdos, and we're not extraordinary in the sense of Moses, but we're down somewhere else in some other category. We're very unordinary. And so if you ever feel like you're the odd one out, that you think of things differently in different ways than the majority of people, or you do things just a different way than other people do, or you have a talent that you know is special to you, but very few people really see the value in it. If you are one of those people who feel different, who feel like sometimes you're out of place, well, I've got good news, because God uses people like you as well. God doesn't just use ordinary people to do extraordinary things, but God uses unordinary people to do extraordinary things. And one of my very favorite unordinary people, as I mentioned, is Ezekiel. Now, Ezekiel isn't one of those prophets that is usually spent a lot of time on. And so if you're not familiar with who Ezekiel was, or even with the book of Ezekiel, I'll try to give you at least a really brief outline. Ezekiel was a priest. So that means he was a Levite who started his prophetic ministry at the age of 30 years old. And he preached, and he prophesied during the time of the Babylonian captivity. And actually, the first half of Ezekiel is before the Babylonians destroy Jerusalem and the temple. And then the second, well, it's not the half, but the last part of Ezekiel is after the Babylonians destroy Jerusalem. So the Ezekiel is right in the middle of the Babylonian conquest. Now, the Babylonian conquest and captivity didn't happen all at once. The Babylonians came in three waves, and Ezekiel was taken by the Babylonians into captivity in one of the earlier waves. So Ezekiel is actually in captivity in the Babylonian Empire, and for the most part, for the first part until about chapter 32, 33, Ezekiel is prophesying in captivity while Jerusalem still stands, while there's still some Jews living in Judea. And one of the hard things for Ezekiel to preach during that first section of Ezekiel is that Ezekiel had to preach some very sobering and hard messages to the Jews in captivity that he was living with. Because what happened was that they got taken into captivity, and the Jews there in Babylon were in captivity, but they were saying, Jerusalem's still there, Our people are still there. Somehow we're going to make it through. Yeah, this is a bad situation, but somehow we're going to make it through. And Ezekiel's message was that, no, we are not. Jerusalem is going to fall. The temple is going to be destroyed. And that was not a message that these Jewish captives wanted. They wanted a message of hope, and Ezekiel didn't have it for them at that time. But for Ezekiel's sake, and I'm really glad that he had this opportunity after the fall of Jerusalem, the last part of Ezekiel's message does turn into one of hope and comfort and helping the captives know that even though God did allow this horrible thing to happen, that good things were going to come later. And then, so Ezekiel's message goes from harsh and sobering to comforting and hopeful for the future. What makes Ezekiel very interesting and unique as a prophet is that he reveals prophecy in many different ways in the book of Ezekiel. First, he has straightforward prophetic messages, which are very much in line with a lot of the other prophets of the Old Testament. He also has prophetic visions that sometimes seem to be similar to Isaiah's visions, or even if we go look to the New Testament, have some similarities with John's prophetic visions in the book of Revelation. Ezekiel also tells parables sometimes, which almost in some ways seems to look forward to Jesus. And in fact, in Ezekiel's prophecies, God calls Ezekiel Son of Man, which is not where Jesus gets Son of Man. Jesus gets that from Daniel. But it is an interesting coincidence that Ezekiel, throughout the book of Ezekiel, God calls him Son of Man to remind Ezekiel of his humanity. But what really makes Ezekiel stand out from every other prophet was that he did things that I can only call prophetic performance art. Ezekiel performs some really strange acts and performs them out live in front of people that have a prophetic meaning or analogous meaning behind them. And I want to look at a few of these. And if you haven't ever read through the book of Ezekiel, I think you'll be kind of surprised of some of the things that God has Ezekiel do. If you would turn to the book of Ezekiel, and we'll start with chapter 4, which is the first of the recorded prophetic performance arts pieces that God has Ezekiel perform. And this is some really avant-garde stuff that Ezekiel's about to do here. And starting in verse 1 of chapter 4, God says, "Now you, son of man, get yourself a brick, place it before you, and inscribe a city on it, Jerusalem. Then lay siege against it, build a siege wall, raise up a ramp, pitch camps, and place battering rams against it all around. Then get yourself an iron plate and set it up as an iron wall between you and the city, and set your face toward it so that it is under siege, and besiege it. This is a sign to the house of Israel." Okay, I want you just to think about this. Okay, so what God has Ezekiel do first is he says, okay, take a brick, inscribe the name of Jerusalem on it, and then get these little figures and build battering ramps and build siege towers and build all of this and surround the city of Jerusalem with all these different things, and then get an iron plate and put a wall between it and you. And God is telling Ezekiel to play with toys, essentially. Okay? Then, verse 4, "As for you, lie down on your left side and lay the iniquity of the house of Israel on it. You shall bear their iniquity for the number of days that you lie on it. For I have assigned you a number of days corresponding to the years of their iniquity, 390 days. Thus you shall bear the iniquity of the house of Israel. And when you have completed these, you shall lie down a second time, but on your right side, and bear the iniquity of the house of Judah. I have assigned it to you for 40 days, a day for each year. Then you shall set your face toward the siege of Jerusalem with your arm bared and prophesy against it. Now behold, I will put ropes on you so that you cannot turn from one side to the other until you have completed the days of your siege. But as for you, take wheat, barley, beans, lentils, millet, and spelt. Put them in one vessel and make it into bread for yourself, and you shall eat it according to the number of the days that you lie on your side, 390 days. Your food which you shall eat will be 20 shekels a day by weight. You shall eat it from time to time. And the water you drink shall be a sixth part of a hin of by measure. You shall drink it from time to time. And you shall eat it as the barley cake, having baked it in their sight, in their sight, over human dung. Okay, we're going to stop here just for a second. Just to make sure we understand what God is asking Ezekiel to do. So after Ezekiel has played with his toys, set up the city of Jerusalem and all these different siege towers and battering rams around it, and he set up this wall, God says, you then lie down on your side for 390 days, so that to bear the sins of the house of Israel for the amount of years that they sinned against me. 390 days. And then after you're done with that, you can get up, but don't get too comfortable because you got to lay down on your other side for 40 days to bear the sins of Judah. And to make sure that you don't get up, I'm going to have someone tie ropes on you so you stay down there. 390 days plus 40 days. 430 days. Ezekiel is supposed to lie on his side for over a year in front of his toys. In front of everybody, it says, in people's sights. So I want you to think about this. Somebody comes, a priest comes to the middle of the town square and he starts playing with some toys. And then he lies down and he has somebody tie him down, and you come by day after day, week after week, month after month, and he's still there. What would you think about that? Would you think that that's a man of God? Or would you think that's a madman? I can tell you what I would think. I would think that guy's crazy. But then also, God tells Ezekiel, okay, I've got some food for you, and it doesn't sound very appetizing, and it's not a lot what God gives him for a daily basis. But then he says, in front of everybody, you cook it over human dung. And you say, would God really make somebody do that? And up until this point, Ezekiel hasn't said anything. It seems like, and this is one of the things about Ezekiel. Ezekiel never talks back to God. Some of the prophets, like Habakkuk or somebody else, they have the audacity to talk back to God. Ezekiel doesn't really, Ezekiel, whatever God tells Ezekiel to do, Ezekiel does it. So Ezekiel is a brat, as far as I can tell, is either a very faithful man, or he's already naturally brash and naturally likes to do these kinds of things. But this is the one thing that Ezekiel has a little bit of a problem with. He says, in verse 13, then the Lord said, thus will the sons of Israel eat their bread unclean among the nations where I banish them. So God has a reason why he's going to have Ezekiel bake it over human dung, because it's going to make it unclean, and that's going to be all the food that the people in Jerusalem are going to have. And then verse 14, it says, but I said, oh Lord, God, behold, I have never been defiled, for from my youth until now I have never eaten what died of itself or was torn by beasts, nor has any unclean meat ever entered my mouth. And then he said, see, I will give you cow's dung in place of human dung over which you will prepare your bread. So God says, all right, Ezekiel, that's fine. Just use cow dung instead. It doesn't sound all that better, but when compared, I guess it is a whole lot better. And then go on to verse 16. Moreover, he said to me, son of man, behold, I am going to break the staff of bread in Jerusalem, and they will eat bread by weight and with anxiety and drink water by measure in horror. So this is why God didn't give Ezekiel a lot of bread or water either. is because during the siege of Jerusalem, the people of Jerusalem are going to have to weigh out their bread and their water, just like Ezekiel is going to have to. And because bread and water will be scarce, and they will be appalled with one another and waste away in their iniquity. So, as we said, so this is one of the things that God has Ezekiel do, and it's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. It's so disgusting even Ezekiel is a little hesitant about it. But you know, Ezekiel's a unique man in this respect, I think. I wonder if, and this is just speculation on my part, because as I've read over Ezekiel over and over again, I wonder if when Ezekiel was in his 20s or when he was a teenager, if he did crazy things for attention. And I wonder if people who knew him when he was a younger man, when he started doing these things for God at the age of 30, and looked at him like week 17 of Ezekiel lying on his side, just wondered, oh, that's that crazy Ezekiel just looking for attention. And they just write Ezekiel off and say, that's Ezekiel being Ezekiel, or that's Ezekiel being way crazy. And they would completely deny God had any involvement in what Ezekiel was doing. And I want you to, and we have the benefit of having God having said this in Ezekiel. But I wonder if something similar happened today in this day and age, if instead of me coming up and preaching a sermon, I started playing with little Green Army soldiers, and then I laid down on my side, and, would you think I was normal? Would you think I was sane? And if I said, I'm doing this to prove a point, would you say, well, what you're doing isn't even worth the point you're trying to prove? Well, it doesn't end there for Ezekiel. After more than a year of laying down on the ground, Ezekiel's built up a good amount of hair on his head and in his face, and God tells him to shave it off with a sword. In chapter 5, it says, as for you, son of man, take a sharp sword, take it and use it as a barber's razor on your head and beard, and then take scales for weighing and divide the hair. 1/3 you shall burn in the fire at the center of the city when the days of the siege are completed. Then you shall take 1/3 and strike it with a sword all around the city, and 1/3 you shall scatter to the wind, and I will unsheath the sword behind them. Take also a few in numbers from them and bind them in the edges of your robes, and take again some of them and throw them into the fire and burn them in the fire. From it, a fire will spread to all the houses of Israel. So I want you to think, okay, after Ezekiel's done 430 days lying on his side, and he's built up this big beard, and he hasn't had a bath, because he's had to stay down on the ground for all this time. Then he's supposed to take a sword and use it like a barber's razor. And then, so now he's in the middle of the street, and now he's using a sword to shave off his hair, and then he meticulously weighs it out. He doesn't just kind of eye it. God says, weigh it out. So he's weighing 1/3 of his hair, 1/3 of his hair, and then he burns some of it, and then he scatters other bits of it, and he strikes his sword on the other parts, and he says, this is about Israel. As I said again, would you think that's a madman or a man of God? Well, there's another interesting one in chapter 12, if you would turn over here. Chapter 12, starting in verse 1. The word of the Lord came to me, saying, son of man, you live in the midst of a rebellious house, who have eyes to see but do not see, ears to hear but do not hear. Now that's a really interesting statement, because that's something that Jesus makes a point of. Why does Jesus talk in parables? Why did Jesus do things that not everybody understood? I want you to think about that. This is a reason why Ezekiel's doing these various things. But for they are a rebellious house. Therefore, son of man, prepare for yourself baggage for exile, and go into exile by day in their sight. even go into exile from your place to another place in their sight. Perhaps they will understand, though they are a rebellious house. Bring your baggage out by day in their sight as baggage for exile. Then you will go out at evening in their sight as those going into exile. Dig a hole through the wall in their sight and go out through it. Load the baggage on your shoulder in their sight and carry it out in the dark. You shall cover your face so that you cannot see the land, for I have set you a sign to the house of Israel. And I did so, as I had been commanded. By day I brought out my baggage like the baggage of an exile, and then in the evening I dug through the walls with my hands. I went out in the dark and carried the baggage on my shoulder in their sight. So here again, Ezekiel's in the town square, and he has baggage and like he's running away in exile. But it's the middle of the day, everybody sees him. Remember, all the times God said, in their sight, make sure people see you. And Ezekiel does all this stuff, and he's acting like an exile in the middle of the day. And by the time it gets to dusk, he's supposed to get to a wall and dig through the wall and then sneak out. But except that everybody sees him. So I'm just imagining, like, have you ever seen like little kids pretend like they're sneaking around and they think they're being like really clever and devious, and they think that they're not being seen, but you can see them? Like, this is almost how I imagine this scene of Ezekiel of trying to sneak out of the town while being quite obviously sneaking out of town. And so now that we've seen some of these things that Ezekiel has done, at this point, I'm sure you're wondering, what does everybody else think about this? Why do all these people, especially this last one where God makes sure, do it in people's sight, make sure that people see this. How did they react to the crazy things that Ezekiel did? Well, it probably won't surprise you that their first reaction to these strange things was to question Ezekiel and ask him, "What are you doing?" It says right there in verse 9 of chapter 12, "Son of man," start in verse 8, "In the morning, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, 'Son of man, has not the house of Israel, the rebellious house, said to you, what are you doing?'" And God's going to give Ezekiel something to tell them. But so this is the natural response. I think if we saw somebody do something as strange as Ezekiel was doing, we'd go, "What are you doing?" And it's in response to this question that God told Ezekiel to tell the people that the pantomime Ezekiel was going to do was an analogy for what would happen in Jerusalem. God didn't merely have Ezekiel tell them, but had Ezekiel act it out. And as I pointed out at the beginning of chapter 12, it's because seeing they do not see and hearing they do not hear. God said, if you just tell them outright, none of them are going to hear it. But if you do this pantomime, maybe, just maybe, some of them will understand. It almost makes me think that God had this pantomime, had Ezekiel do this outrageous pantomime, so that people would at least ask. And then people would actually be interested in, what is this guy saying? Whereas if Ezekiel just came out and said, "I've got a message for you," everybody would be like, yeah, whatever. Who are you? But their reaction to Ezekiel changes over time. If you would, turn to chapter 20 a little bit later. In chapter 20 and verse 49, there's another reaction the people have to Ezekiel. Ezekiel said, "Ah, Lord God, they are saying of me, 'Is he not just speaking parables?'" So some people, a little bit later, think they have Ezekiel figured out. They're saying, "Oh, Ezekiel, yeah, that's the crazy guy that tells funny stories. That's the crazy guy that tells parables and acts them out. Yeah, that's always good for a laugh. Good old Ezekiel." But Ezekiel's pantomimes and performances, or whatever we want to call them, weren't just there to be silly, weren't there to be scandalous, although I'm sure they were, weren't there to be entertaining, although if I was there, I would probably have been very entertained by them. It wasn't a laughing matter. There is one other performance art piece in chapter 24 that breaks my heart every time I read it. It's one of the saddest things I've ever read in the Bible, I think. Chapter 24, starting in verse 15, it says, "The word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, behold, I am about to take from you the desire of your eyes with a blow, but you shall not mourn, and you shall not weep, and your tears shall not come. Groan silently, but make no mourning for the dead. Bind on your turban, and put your shoes on your feet, and do not cover your mustache, and do not eat the bread of men." I want you to put yourself in the sandals of Ezekiel. You've received some visions. You've received some crazy things from God to do, and you've done them all, and you've subjected yourself to all the ridicule that would have come Ezekiel's way. You have subjected yourself to all the people laughing behind their backs at you because you laid on your side for over a year. And you did crazy things with your hair, and people who don't understand you. People who probably believe that Ezekiel was crazy, and he did all this for God. And then one day God says, "I'm going to take the delight of your eyes from you. I'm going to take away what you love more than anything in this world, Ezekiel. And you can't show any outward emotions. You can feel bad on the inside, but you cannot shed even a single tear." And verse 18, "So I spoke to the people in the morning, and in the evening my wife died. And in the morning, I did as I was commanded." That breaks my heart right there. It tears me up inside the first time I read that, and I really read that. You know, this wasn't just fun and games for Ezekiel. I'm sure this was probably the toughest day of Ezekiel's life. Ezekiel had told, and this is one of the things, so Ezekiel got the message. He told the people what the message was, and then she died. And the people see that Ezekiel is not mourning the death of his wife. And nobody thinks Ezekiel's heartless. Everybody knows Ezekiel. He's the guy who does the crazy things. He's the guy that tells the parables. He's not heartless. God called Ezekiel's wife the delight of his eyes. People must have known Ezekiel loved his wife very much. And they ask him a new question. They've stopped asking him, "What are you doing, Ezekiel?" And they've stopped asking, or they've stopped putting Ezekiel in a box and say, "Oh yeah, that's the guy who tells parables." They ask a new question in verse 19 of chapter 24. "The people said to me, 'Will you not tell us what these things that you are doing mean for us?'" You know, after all these visions, all these parables, all these pantomimes, people are starting to come around to Ezekiel and understanding when Ezekiel does something, he means something by it. And they're not asking, "What are you doing?" They're not thinking he's crazy. They want to know what it means. They've learned to ask Ezekiel for the reason behind the strange things that he does. And the reason is the same throughout this part of Ezekiel. Jerusalem and the temple are going to be destroyed. The things that you love the most will not be spared. So it makes me wonder sometimes why God made Ezekiel do all these strange things. Why didn't God just give the people a straightforward message? Later in the book, chapter 33, which is really the turning point in the book of Ezekiel, where Ezekiel's message turns from warning and judgment to hope for the future. In chapter 33, the word gets to the people in captivity. Jerusalem's been captured. But at the end of chapter 33, starting in verse 30, God says to Ezekiel, "But as for you, son of man, your fellow citizens who talk about you by the walls and in the doorways of the houses, speak to one another, each to his brother, saying, 'Come now and hear what the message is which comes forth from the Lord.'" Listen, so one of the things, Ezekiel did all these things to get people to talk. To get people to talk with each other. And also, notice, they recognize that Ezekiel's from the Lord. And that's also part of this talk. Verse 31, "They come to you as people come, and sit before you as my people and hear your words. But they do not do them. For they do the lustful desires expressed by their mouth, and their heart goes after their gain. Behold, you are to them as a sensual song by one who has a beautiful voice and plays well on an instrument. For they hear your words, but they do not practice them. So when it comes to pass, as surely it will, then they will know that a prophet has been in their midst." God says also he's doing this so that eventually they'll understand Ezekiel really was a prophet. But in the meantime, they're excited to listen to Ezekiel, but God says, here in the NASB, it calls it a sensual song. In the ESV, it calls it a lustful song. And in other versions, I've seen different translations. Some of them call it an entertaining song, which is where I've got the title of this sermon. But I want you to think about that. God says, Ezekiel, to the people, you're like an entertaining song sung with a beautiful voice, and someone who plays well on an instrument. You know, most popular songs, most entertaining songs are lustful or sensual. So it's not just a development in the last half century that our music has gotten this way. It's been that way forever. But I want you to think about this analogy. This is what God says people will think of Ezekiel. I want you to think about when you were really interested in music, so when you were a teenager most likely, and you turned on the radio and you heard that new song that you just loved so much, and every time you heard it on the radio, you had to turn it up, and you're like, yeah, this is my song, and you start singing along with it, and you listen to it so much that you're sick of it 3 months later, but during that 3 months, oh man, it's a glorious 3 months, right? And you say, every time that song comes on the radio, you're like, turn that up, I love this song. And you sing along with it, the tune gets stuck in your head, and someone comes by and asks you, what does that song mean? And you think for a moment, and what does that song mean? I have no idea. I love listening to it. I've heard it 1,000 times. I know it by heart. I sing it in the shower. And yet I have no idea what that song means. And that was Ezekiel. And that's how God meant for Ezekiel to be. It reminds me of an account of Jesus in John chapter 6. The people started following Jesus because he fed the 5,000 and they wanted to be fed again. And Jesus says at one point, "I am the living bread. If you eat this bread, you will live forever. The bread will give life to the world, and that is my flesh." And the people start discussing about what Jesus said. They said, did he just say what I thought he said? Does he want us to become cannibals? And it's not at this point that Jesus says, oh, wait, you misunderstood me. I was talking in a metaphor. You don't really have to eat my body. It's a metaphor to talk about how spiritually close you got to be to me. You've got to be so close to me that you got to eat me. You've got to consume me. You've got to become so so much a part of me that I'm inside you. Jesus doesn't say that. Instead, when people start questioning, what did Jesus mean? Does he mean we're supposed to be cannibals? Jesus then continues and says, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no life. And eventually in that chapter, everyone leaves Jesus except for the 12. And even the 12 don't even understand Jesus. When Jesus asks them, are you going to leave me too? They say, where would we go? They didn't say, oh no, Jesus, we understand. You were talking in a metaphor. It's all good. They don't say that. They say, you know, you have the words of life. We don't understand them, but where else are we going to go? And I wonder if some people would say, you know, Jesus wasn't a very good communicator. Jesus, you know, if he had preached that sermon, and when people start, you know, not understanding what he said, and he encourages that misunderstanding, Jesus would have gotten fired from virtually every church that's ever been established. You need to stop speaking so strangely, Jesus. You're scaring away the visitors. You need to stop being so strange, Ezekiel. People might go to you for the wrong reasons. That's what God meant for people to go to Ezekiel for the wrong reasons. Why can't you be more like Jeremiah, Ezekiel? Why can't you be more like Isaiah? You know, you had some of those visions. Why don't you do more visions like that? Those were fine. I can handle visions. I can't handle this performance art stuff. And the point of all of this is to say, God uses us for different purposes. Though we are of the same body, though we are all supposed to be imitators of Christ, as Paul says, be imitators of me as I am imitators of Christ. Even though we're all striving to be like the same person, that's going to manifest itself in different ways. If you would turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. First Corinthians chapter 12, starting in verse 14, Paul says, for the body is not one member, but many. If the foot says, because I am not a hand, I am not a part of the body, it is not for this reason any the less a part of the body. But if the ear says, because I am not an eye, I am not a part of the body, it is not for this reason any less a part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? And if the whole were hearing, where would the sense of smell be? But now God has placed the members, each one of them, in the body just as He desired. Just because some of us are weirdos and have a strange function like Ezekiel, and I'm very purposely putting myself in that us category there, is because we have a different function, and even though it doesn't seem like the best function, it doesn't mean that those people are unprofitable or working against God necessarily. It doesn't necessarily mean that. And if you are a foot, it doesn't mean that you should try to conform yourself to a hand. If God made you to be an eye, don't try to become an ear. This isn't just a good reminder for those of us who might be one of those weirdos, one of those oddballs, one of those unordinary people like Ezekiel. A good reminder for us that if we have a talent or a function that no one else has, or we do things differently than how everybody else does it, that we should be content with the way that God made us. But it also should be a lesson for all of those who are hands, or all of those who are the more desirable members, or the ones who are the more common members, to not expect the foot to act like a hand, in order for them to be good and proper Christians. Not everyone is ordinary. Not everyone does the same thing the same way. And that's because that's the way God made us. So if you feel like an oddball sometimes, Remember that God uses oddballs, just like Ezekiel. Maybe nobody else understands why there's an appendix in the body, and maybe you're the appendix, and maybe everybody else doesn't understand why you're there, but God put you there for a reason. And though maybe not everyone understands why you can't just be normal, why you can't just do things the way everybody else does them, know that God doesn't, if God made you abnormal, embrace that. God didn't make you normal, and that's good, because God doesn't make mistakes. God just expects you to follow Him, even if that means following Him is unique compared to everybody else. The church is the body of Christ, and that's important to remember. We're not just a body of all hands, or a body of all eyeballs, or a body of all pancreases. We're a single body made up of diverse and differently talented people, and that's the way God meant it to be. So let's be content, if you are in Ezekiel, to be in Ezekiel, or if you're not in Ezekiel, to let the Ezekiels do the strange things that the Ezekiels do. And if you haven't become a part of that body of Christ, even if you are the weirdest person that God ever made, God still wants you a part of that body. God still made you and loves you and sent His Son Jesus to die for you. And you can accept the blood of Jesus Christ and become a member of that body, of Christ's body, and walk in newness of life. Just be baptized, believe in Jesus, and walk with Him. Or if you need the prayers of the congregation, if we can help you in any way on your spiritual walk with God, please let us know and come forward as we stand and sing.